listening to Truth to You with Jono and Connie. G'day.
Hello.
And g'day wherever you may be around the world. It is good to have your company. It is time for the Cultured Pearls with the Cultured Karaite. G'day, Deborah.
Shalom, y'all. How are you doing?
Doing very, very well. And it's wonderful to have you on the program. But before we talk about anything, I have to say a big mazel tov to Hanok Ben Isaac and Betz, his beautiful wife, on the birth of their son Uriel.
Yes.
Mazel tov.
Yes. And so that's their second son, their third child. And congratulations to them. That's good news. And now I have a couple of things I want to touch on and ask you about actually today, Deborah. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Here it is. Last week, everybody, starting with our youngest, got a cold. He got a cold, he got a sniffle, bit of a cough, sneezing, spluttering, all that sort of stuff. And, of course, he shared it with his brother because he shares everything with his brother. And he loves mummy and he loves her so much that he gave it to mummy. And then his older sister got it as well. Everyone was getting it. I thought, no way, I am not having this. So, do you know what I did?
Garlic.
Not just any old garlic, Jeff, but fermented garlic. You said, the last time that we spoke, you said, hey, fermented garlic, great thing. Got to ferment your garlic, put it in the fridge, just pull it out whenever you want. You can use it in the cooking, so on and so forth. I thought, what a brilliant idea. So we fermented, not only did we ferment garlic, but we fermented chili as well. Mm. Oh, that is awesome.
Mm. That went very, very quickly.
That's a winner.
We've got some more on the bench to do.
Good.
That's a winner as well. And I thought, hey, I am not getting this cold. I am going to go the fermented garlic. So I did. And I ate maybe 2 cloves a day.
We didn't go anywhere.
We didn't. Oh, yeah, yeah. And I did take that. And I did take that into consideration. I thought, okay, so I'm not going anywhere. I'm not being social over the next few days. Clearly, I'm not taking the family anywhere. Let's just stay home and stink it up. So I went hard on the fermented garlic. Now, I will say, I didn't get the cold.
No, he didn't.
Didn't get it.
He stayed healthy, which was
experiment. I love it when the experiment comes out well like that.
I didn't get one symptom, which is great. However, something interesting happened, and I'm just going to tell you about it. I noticed in my enthusiastic garlic eating, as I was looking through the garlic cloves, I thought, rather than cut one in half or something, I'll find a small garlic clove, I'll just swallow it whole, chew it up. And in doing so, I discovered something odd in my jar of fermented garlic. Do you know what it was?
I think I might.
One of my garlic cloves had turned blue.
Blue.
It was a very frightening moment, I can tell you.
It should have been gorgeous.
I'm telling you, blue. And for me, when I look at something that's blue, unless it's specifically a blueberry, it's blue for me has always been a color that you just don't consume.
Like blue Smarties.
Blue Smarties or those blue energy drinks. It's like toilet water. I think, what is going on with these people drinking these things? There's just a color that shouldn't be consumed. Lo and behold, it was a beautiful sky blue garlic clove. And I looked at Hani and I thought, what is this? I'm talking to Dev about this. This is not on. This is not meant to happen. Am I going to die now that I've just eaten these garlic cloves and one of them's blue or what? Anyway, so now I did.
Gorgeous color. It was a beautiful color.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, like I said, show me the color of the natural blue things that we eat. I mean, how many can we name? There's blueberry. What else is there?
And they're not really blue. They're sort of purpley. They're not.
Yeah, no, they're not truly blue. Truly blue. What is blue that we eat? Come on, Zeph, you must be able to think of something.
I can't think of a thing.
Okay, so blue really says, hey, I'm blue. Stay away from me. I'm not food. I'm a piece of plastic, or I'm some sort of, you know, chemical-induced lolly or something. I'm blue. Don't eat me if you've got, you know, any brains.
But mind you, it was only the one garlic clove.
Well, it was only the one, and I separated it, and I looked at it conspicuously, and I thought, I'm going to put you under the microscope. Actually, I couldn't be bothered. I gave it to the chickens. But the next day, Dev, I returned to the garlic cloves, the jar of garlic cloves, and more of them had turned blue. Can you explain it?
Well, I think I can. Garlic has sulfur in it. And if your water that you use to ferment the garlic cloves in even had like a small trace element of copper in it, you've seen copper, turn that pretty blue green color. If it's, I guess it actually is starting to corrode when it gets that pretty blue green color on it. But that's what happens, is it interacts with the sulfur in the garlic and it will turn it blue or blue green or even green. I even know some people that their garlic turned a little purple. But blue or blue green garlic it can happen. It happens a lot. The garlic is just fine. All that happened was that the sulfur in the garlic interacted with a trace amount of copper in the water.
So we have rainwater here. I wouldn't assume that there would be much copper.
No.
Maybe it's in the pipes. Maybe copper pipes.
It could be in the pipe. And it doesn't take much for that reaction to happen. It can be just in a very tiny, small trace amount of copper in the water. Not an amount that's dangerous at all. Mm. Just a small, but it just reacts with the sulfur, because garlic has so much sulfur in it.
Mm.
And it just reacts with that and changes it to a beautiful blue color.
Oh, so what you're telling me is that I could have eaten, I didn't eat them, Dev. I gave them to the chickens, and I bet the chickens are really healthy for it.
Yeah, but well, at least I fed them nice healthy eggs.
Nice healthy eggs. Nothing goes to waste when you have chickens.
I can't wait to see what color the eggs are.
Yeah, I'll let you know. But I mean, it was really interesting because I mentioned that Hani also did the chili. And she put a garlic in with the chili just to sort of flavor it a little bit as well. And that one in turn blue. And then I thought, so it's not an isolated case. Mm. This is, you know, because the chili seems fine. This is interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, so all it is the sulfur interacting with the minimal amount of copper that's naturally in the water. And
just trace amount, right.
Trace elements of copper, and it turns it blue. Well, now, that's, I did go and we went and got some more garlic. We're going to do the experiment again. I'm going to wait for them to turn blue, and I'm going to do the experiment. If I die, everybody knows now on the radio, it's your fault. Right.
It's my fault. But, you know, that is the interesting thing with ferments. They are so safe. They are amazingly safe. And from what I understand, especially with ferments, if it's something that you can't stand to smell whatsoever, it causes a violent reaction in you, the smell does, that's when it's bad. And if it doesn't cause that, then it's perfectly good.
I was just going to say that it goes against, you know, all of, everything that you're taught when you're young and everything you're brought up with, you know, it's got to be totally refrigerated and it's best if you don't do it, you know, that the professionals need to preserve this properly
You know, when I first saw it, I thought, this is why it's turned blue.
I went into a panic.
It's a visual war. Yeah, because I was making the boys have it. I'm saying, come on, boys, you'll get better real quick if you have some of this garlic, son. Put this garlic in you and chew it up. It's good for you. You'll be better. Oh, look. Now that you've eaten it, some of it's blue.
Oh,
oh.
No, I've killed my whole family.
Yeah. Why? But it is. It's going to be a visual wall for me to jump over. Mm. But now, it smelled fine. It tasted just like normal. Everything was fine. But it is interesting that you say that, Dev, because I want to tell you a story, and I want to talk about this for a little while.
Okay.
This is just a couple of examples in my life where I have eaten things that I have been told are very, very healthy and very, very good for me. One example, I was with a friend, and we were driving from Queensland. We were taking a truck from Queensland all the way down to Sydney, from Brisbane to Sydney.
It's about 1,000 kilometres.
Yeah, it's a decent drive. And before we left, we stopped somewhere for lunch, and he was sort of a healthy kind of guy, and he said to me, hey, I'm going to get this, and this, and I'm going to get a shot of barley grass. I said, a shot of barley grass? What's that about? And he goes, a little shot of barley grass. This is, they juice the barley grass. It's really, really good for you. I said, really? And he said, yeah. And I thought, I'll get one of those too. Now, I didn't put two and two together until much later, but I had a shot of barley grass, and I became violently ill over the next few hours. We eventually had to stop in a place called Newcastle, which is only a couple of hours north of Sydney, because we just couldn't go any further. I had to get a hotel, and I was just, I was green as could be. And now another time that this happened, not quite as bad, it was recommended to Hani that she get some chlorella. Chlorella is an algae, and it's regarded as a superfood, and you can buy it in a dried tablet form, and it's very, very good for multiple reasons. And she was really talking it up. Now, she tried some, and that was fine. I thought, well, I'll try some of this as well. I had a chlorella tablet that evening. I was throwing up. I was sick. And it wasn't until I investigated the chlorella and why it was making me sick that I realized, you know, the years before when I had this reaction to the barley grass, I didn't realize it was the barley grass at the time. I now realize that it was. And what it was, it seems like, if I understand the science correctly, it's as if your body is saying to you, oh, you want to do this now? You're giving me the green light to do this now. You're telling me we're going to get rid of all the toxins in your body. We're going to detox. We're going to have a serious detox. Okay, here it goes. Get ready to throw up. And it was... Yeah. And it wasn't that it was making me sick, although that was the symptoms. It was that it was purging my body of that which shouldn't be there. It was removing the toxins from my body, giving it the ability to do so.
Which I suppose is a form of what you've been through recently, Jim.
So that is my question. Is this something that one can expect from fermented foods?
You know, I believe it is. I've experienced it. My husband, so far, everybody I've talked to goes, if they really, you know, clean up their diet and get on the probiotic foods and all of those things, all kinds of things are going to happen. Body odors can increase in the beginning. You can become very ill. Vomiting, flu-like symptoms, because what happens is your body takes the good stuff, the stuff that's very good for it, and your body's so excited, and it's like, oh, finally, and it begins to heal. It's the tissues and the cells, and it gets to the point where it's like, okay, we want to get rid of the toxins that are here because now we're getting strong and new and vibrant and we want to start shedding, you know, the stuff that's been here for a while and we haven't really known what to do with. And that will happen if it's not quite such a violent reaction. Unfortunately, what you had, I know, was a violent reaction, but it actually has a name called Herxheimer's reaction, where those toxins do just start, you know, coming out and they have to be eliminated. But they're toxins and you're getting a bigger shot of them at one time. You know, for years I have put toxins in my body, you know, a small amount at a time. But there comes a day when, you know, what all is there wants to come out all at once. Mm-hmm. Well, that becomes a more violent situation. And you can be sick at your stomach. You can have flu-like symptoms. You can simply ache. You can have like leg, back pain, ache, just like, oh, I think I'm coming down with the flu. This aches so bad I can hardly walk. But it never, you know, develops into the flu. This is known as the Herxheimer's reaction, or what's called a healing crisis. And the healing crisis is a little bit stronger, lasts a little bit longer, which is what I feel like I've just been through. But boy, I tell you, I feel good.
You sound great compared to how you sounded last week. You sounded terrible last week, but you sound great. So tell us a little bit about what happened to you. I mean, before you do that, Deb, sorry, let me just get this straight. Is it because all of a sudden, an individual may become more health conscious? They may be taking into their body things that are much healthier and actually proactive in producing health in the body, that the body now says, oh, I feel energized. I feel like we can do this now. Let's get rid of all this bad stuff. Is that kind of, in layman's terms, is that kind of what happens?
Exactly. I mean, absolutely exactly. When your body starts making, you know, taking the new food and the new good things that you're nourishing it with, I mean, you're actually finally nourishing your body. And it really wants to get rid of all the old stuff that it has, you know, stuck in it and hasn't been able to process or to get rid of. Mm-hmm. And your body is very smart. It does wait until you have the ability to do this elimination. It's not stupid. You know, if you're healthy enough and your body, you know, it's almost like they all go, guys, are you ready? You know, lungs, are you ready? Nose, are you ready? Yeah. You know, it does wait until it is pretty sure it can handle, yes, you know, this big toxic load dump. And it's interesting that most often, especially with a big healing crisis, if you really change your life completely, you will get sick in the same ways you have gotten sick in the past. In other words, if you were always prone to upper respiratory infections, and that was me, asthma, upper respiratory infections, those kinds of things, that's what you're going to get sick with. And so you know, instantly, it's so normal to think, oh my gosh, I've caught something. I've really caught something. Mm-hmm. But there's a difference in a healing crisis, because first of all, you know what you've been putting into your body, and you know it's been really, really good stuff. Mm-hmm. And number two, a healing crisis, just like with your barley grass, comes on really suddenly.
Mm.
It's like your body's like, all right, let's get rid of this stuff. And it'll come on suddenly. If I was really coming down with an upper respiratory infection like I used to have in the past, I would have had a couple of days of a scratchy throat or, you know, nose getting stopped up. I felt so great on a Monday and a Monday night, and I woke up Tuesday under the bed, not in it. I was under the bed.
Wow.
It happened all at once. Oh my gosh, I had the nose, I had the sore throat, I was throwing up. But it's interesting, I had high fever, and I have always been told my whole life, when you have fever, do not drink a milk product. Mm-hmm. And I would throw up for a while, and I'd lay down, and I thought, you know, you really need to keep your strength up, and you're getting rid of these toxins. So I would go get a little shot of kefir. I'd get like 4 ounces of kefir, and I'd down that kefir, and oh man, it tasted so good. And I'd lay down for a few more hours. I never lost a drop of kefir. It was weird how I was so sick in my stomach, but I could drink the kefir. I didn't get sick in my stomach with the kefir, and it didn't, even with a high fever, it didn't do what milk is supposed to do when you have a high fever. I could drink the kefir.
That's amazing.
That is interesting. When the body reacts this way, it wants to eliminate.
It does. It's trying hard.
However it can, which is why we often end up throwing up, right? And what it is throwing up, or what it is eliminating from the body, is the toxins. And so how long, this took you by surprise. I mean, you were surprised that you were sick, right? You couldn't understand it. And so you did the investigation and understood this, as I did later when I was looking into the chlorella and why it was I was having a reaction. This was a healing crisis, as you call it. So it's interesting, because particularly also, well, I guess for a lot of the listeners as well, I would imagine they're the same, have a similar story to Hani and I, because I've heard so many of them, that, you know, we didn't eat kosher, we didn't eat according to the Bible for so many years in the tradition that we came from. You could eat anything you wanted to. If you could consume it, it must be food.
Yeah.
And also, you know, living in our earlier lives, you know, not as responsible as we should have been.
Yep.
Let's just leave it at that. And who knows what is built up in the body? And then all of a sudden, when you start to become rather health conscious, you soon realize that there are build-ups of toxins in your body that must go, and your body lets you know.
It's something that people can. I mean, it might not happen, or it's something that's bound to happen once you're starting on the healthy lifestyle.
You know, of course, I guess it really depends on how unhealthy you've been, how much processed food you've done, you know, prior. I know, you know, for me, my diet wasn't great. I would have, you know, times in my life when I had a really good diet and then, you know, kind of fall off the wagon. To be honest, this is the first time in my life that I have changed everything and made it a lifestyle. Right. And actually found that to be the way to go.
Yeah.
Not a diet or a plan, or I'm going to try this for a while or that for a while.
You
know, I really made it a complete, like, I love what you always say, a paradigm shift in my whole life.
And so now, how did you deal with it? You just let it take its course. You're saying you had a fever. You let the fever just take its course as well, right? You let it do it. You just let the body do its thing.
I did not take one thing other than water and kefir. Finally, after, you know, about the third day, I started getting a little bit of an appetite, and I had some, you know, fresh organic soups. But I didn't take a thing. I wanted my body to do whatever it wanted to do, you know, to get rid of this stuff.
That's very brave of you, Deb, because I know that, I mean, that the urge to take some painkillers or something must have been there at some point.
I did get tired of the fever, I can tell you that. But you know, I really just, I knew what was going on. That was what was so wonderful, is a good friend of mine, Linda Sprague, had put me on to a book called Healing Crisis by Bruce Fife. And I already had the book, and I had read through it, you know, kind of what I call glazed through it. Mm. Believe me, as soon as I was able to start reading again, I got that book, and I read the whole book as fast as I could. It's an amazing book, and it helps you to realize, you know, what is going on with you, and you don't need to run to the doctor, even as sick as you can get, and you can get very, very sick. Mm-hmm. And especially somebody like me who's overweight, I've got, you know, fat holds toxins. And if you don't believe it, you know, go through this once. It holds toxins, and when they come out, it's really ugly. Yeah. But you know, you want them out. That's what you want.
That's right.
You want to make sure that you're ridding. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't mean to be gross here, and I apologize for that, but I have to get a point across that when you, on processed foods, if you read natural flavors or natural colors, they're lying to you. Those things are chemically made. And you go and do the research to find out what really is a natural color in this processed food that you're eating. And I'm going to tell you, at some point, your body doesn't know what to do with it. But it will come back out. And when it comes back out, you can be quite shocked at a color coming out of yourself. This in particular that I'm talking about came
blue?
From my nose and my head.
It blue?
No, it wasn't blue.
All right.
But it was definitely man-made. Mm-hmm. And I knew it. The second I saw it, I knew it. I knew absolutely that was chemical color.
Yeah.
That was not something that my body was producing naturally.
Goodness me.
So, I use the, I guess you've heard of a neti pot where you, can rinse your sinuses out with the saline water with a little neti.
Oh, sure, yes.
I was using that quite a bit, but I have mine's electric. I'm not coordinated with the neti pot, so I just get the electric one, and it's one of the, you can't miss, you know.
Sure.
I use that, and literally, I was just astounded at the colors, and very obviously that they were not colors my body manufactured.
Goodness me. So while this is not something that you would look forward to, it's kind of something that you would look forward to. I mean, you feel great now, right?
I do. I've got a little remnant, you know, left, kind of in my throat, maybe just, you know, have to clear my throat occasionally. But oh my goodness, I can't tell you the difference that I've lost weight. And I didn't lose it, I don't think in a bad way, even though nobody likes to be sick. But oh my goodness, it's been an amazing situation. I want to say something. I want to kind of make an announcement. There are some people who know me, and some people who don't. But for the ones who do know me, they'll know. They can vouch for me. Let me put it that way. Since November of 2010. I got really, really sick, really bad sick. And I, through that sickness, and that was a disease. That was not a healing crisis. That was a disease crisis. And I developed asthma. I have not had asthma. I did as a kid, and, you know, what they call outgrew it, and haven't had troubles with asthma. But I got asthma in 2010 and have been on an inhaler daily since November of 2010.
Daily?
Daily. It's been what's called a preventative whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I have to be honest, I have needed it daily. And that's been a real big dismay thing in my life. It has kept me dismayed a lot and kept me in prayer a lot to get rid of it. And I use the inhaler. This has been today. Today is Sunday. I used the inhaler 2 weeks ago on Sunday. I woke up Tuesday morning sick. And I have not used the inhaler since.
Interesting.
Through that whole sickness, through that whole where you were ill, you haven't had to use the inhaler at all?
Not once. As a matter of fact, I haven't even felt like I needed it. I haven't even had a moment where I thought, as bad as my chest has been with congestion, it has not been the asthma congestion. It's been like a cold congestion. I have not had one tiny speck of asthma.
Well, there you go.
How do you explain that? What do you think has happened? I mean, you haven't needed it since, is what you're saying?
I haven't needed it. I haven't used it. I don't appear to have asthma anymore now.
Wow.
Well, and I do praise Jehovah. I do praise Him because I do know ultimately it's Him, but I also understand now that, my body wasn't designed to have asthma. I wasn't created to have a disease.
Amen.
And so, if I use the things that Jehovah has created in order to live, and which is what I'm trying to do with the ancient path and the whole food, I believe that my body wants to respond, to the food He created for it and respond positively. And I think this is a positive response. And, what scares me is that somebody's going to go away and say, Deb said, I won't have asthma anymore. I can't promise you that. I can only tell you what's happened in my life,
Well, that's great. Well, that's great news. It's worth going through a healing crisis if it means that you don't need your asthma inhaler.
Right.
Anymore. That is great. That is really good news, and praise you for that. I think that's a wonderful testimony.
I am right now. I am 100% medicine free. I came off of the blood pressure medicine in October after starting the kefir, and then that was the last thing, and I'm done.
Excellent.
That's wonderful.
That is wonderful. You're no longer chained to the pharmacy. No longer chained.
Not
to the
at all.
That is grand. That is grand. And that's really where everybody wants to be and should be.
I think so. It's not too hard. That's the thing. Everybody wants it. And, Honey and I want to, talk and help people understand that it's not hard.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah,
that's the reason why you're on the program.
That's right. I obviously can't believe how simple it actually is. And I think for me, the hard part is getting my preconceived ideas about fermenting and things like that and dealing with that. It's not the actual process of doing it. It's just being confident enough to eat it and say,
blue garlic for everyone.
Me.
That's right. That's right.
There it is.
Oh my goodness.
Now, what else are we talking about? You mentioned that you were going to bring a controversial topic to today's program. What is that? Should we dive into that now?
Well, let me, I do want to go back and, when we talked last time, we were talking about the wheat, and I really wasn't 100% sure of my terminology on genetically modified, the GMO terminology versus the hybridization terminology. And to be honest, I guess the technique is different, but it accomplishes the same thing. It changes the DNA. It changes the genes.
Yes.
You say tomato, I say tomato. In technical terms, there are companies out there that can say to you, our flour is not GMO'd. Our wheat that we use in our flour is not GMO. Wow. And that's true. That is true. It is hybridized. And the genes are changed. The DNA is different. And it's this Frankengrain that Dr. Davis talks about.
Mm-hmm.
But they will actually, say, well, it's not GMO'd. And what people, I hope, will understand is there's a huge difference in organic and GMO. You can have something that's hybridized or GMO, and it can be organically grown.
Right.
So don't be fooled, by that. By that kind of thing. Don't eat oranges without seeds in them. Don't eat watermelon without seeds in it. Don't eat that stuff.
Yeah.
Don't eat seedless grapes.
Yeah.
Don't do that. And I just wanted to read just one little blurb out of the book so that we are clear that the wheat today is hybridized, but it still changes the genes. It still changes the DNA. It's no different. So don't be
This is from Dr. Davis's book, Wheat Belly, right?
Wheat Belly, yes. Okay. It's such a great book. And it's just a short little thing here. Courtesy of modern human-designed hybridizations, triticum species, which is wheat species of today, are hundreds, perhaps thousands of genes apart from the original einkorn wheat that bred naturally. Triticum wheat of today is the product of breeding to generate greater yield and characteristics such as disease, drought, and heat resistance. In fact, wheat has been modified by humans to such a degree that modern strains are unable to survive in the wild without human support, such as nitrite fertilization and pest control. That's a bizarre situation. And he goes on to say, modern wheat expresses a higher quantity of genes for gluten protein, which we talked about, gluten is bad. Mm. So this is, you know, it's not technically genetically modified, but it is definitely hybridized completely out of the ballpark.
Oh, amazing. So it's like trying to release a totally domesticated animal back out into the wild, and they can't cope because they haven't learnt the skills. And it's just, are you saying that Dr. Davis is saying it's the same with the wheat? It can't grow out there.
Same thing. So with that in mind, I would like to ask a very controversial question. Ooh. And I hope I want to get real crazy here. I want to get like Keith Johnson. I want to get crazy and controversial.
Go on,
then. And I hope that our listeners will give us feedback, because I don't have an answer to this question. You know, we haven't touched on, and this is my fault, because I really wanted to bring it up, in Leviticus 19 and Deuteronomy 22, where we're told in the Torah not to mix seed. And it's interesting because we don't know, you know, exactly what that means, but we have a better context in Deuteronomy 22 verse 9, where it says, thou shalt not sow thy vineyard with different kinds of seeds, right, lest the fruit of the seed which you've sown and the fruit of the vineyard be defiled. So that's actually a stronger statement than in Leviticus 19:19, to be defiled. So, okay, let me just ask this question, and I'll use myself as an example. And I don't have an answer. If I know that the wheat today is mixed, changed, you know, that it's horrible, absolutely horrible, then is it my obligation under the Torah to not partake of it?
Can I, you know what, that is a controversial question, and I'm going to attempt to answer it, at least from my perspective. I've even got the Keith Johnson Nearly Inspired version in front of me, and it says, Leviticus 19:19, it says, keep my decrees, do not mate different kinds of animals, do not plant your field with two kinds of seed, do not wear clothing woven of two kinds of material. Now, if we look at, I mean, we could just take that middle part there, do not plant your field with two kinds of seed, but if you compare it with the first part of that verse, do not mate different kinds of animals, it kind of illustrates the point, I think, for me, anyhow. But Dev, you've just pointed out that the common wheat that we have today, that is in almost everything.
It is
a result of not of genetic modification, but a result of what was the term you used?
Hybridization.
Now, should we just define that? My understanding of hybridization is that it's cross-pollinated so many times with different things that eventually you're going to end up with some kind of mutation, not from DNA manipulation in the laboratory, but just by literally growing it with another species and naturally cross-pollinating and ending up with mutations until you find something that's going to reproduce. Is that your understanding?
It is. I do have a talking about the chromosomes. 28 chromosomes in a wheat called emmer, 14 chromosomes in a wheat called einkorn, which is, those both are the ancient wheats, and 42 chromosomes in modern wheat.
That's just incredible.
It is.
Well, it's a totally different thing.
It's a different monster altogether. Yeah. Just once again, 28 chromosomes in emmer, 14 chromosomes in einkorn. They are ancient wheats.
Yes.
And in the common wheat that we have today, it has 42 chromosomes. It's a different monster altogether.
Yeah.
So the other verse that you mentioned, of course, is Deuteronomy chapter 22. It begins in verse 9. Do not plant two kinds of seed in your vineyard. If you do so, not only will the crops you plant, but also the fruit of your vineyard be defiled. They'll be defiled. Do not plow together with an ox or a donkey yoked together. Do not wear clothes of woolen linen woven together. So again, and as you mentioned, Deuteronomy 22 verse 9 illustrates it a little bit more. Don't put two different kinds of seed in your vineyard, because you're going to end up with some kind of cross-pollinated fruit, which is going to develop seed that is going to bring about a different crop next year.
So there's definitely a theme of not mixing
things. An altered crop. It's going to be altered.
Yeah, and there's a theme of not mixing.
There's definitely a theme of not mixing.
And the modern wheat that we have today, and so many other things too, are mixed.
My goodness, the things that they're doing today, Dev.
It's scary. To me, it's just scary.
And the fact of the matter is, you should be able to go to the market and buy a tomato and be confident that what you're eating is a tomato.
Yeah. The way that our Creator created it, the way that He designed it, that He designed food for us to be food for us, the way that's right. He made it. We shouldn't be altering it and putting those things into our body. So it is a controversial one, Dev, and it's an interesting one that you raise. According to those verses, can we eat bread? Can we eat what is vastly the most popular form of wheat today, the common wheat, the 42 chromosome wheat? Is it okay for us to consume that?
And I know that my husband, and I have to throw in some comedy here. You know, I'm known as the cultured Karaite, and he's known as the fungi.
Oh, the fungi! I'm waiting for the
fungi.
I'm waiting for the second word. The fungi. He's the fungi.
He's a fungi. So the fungi has decided, you know, for our house that we will not partake of anything if we can possibly find out that it has been altered in any way. We will not partake of it. Mm-hmm. He's made that decision for our home because, you know, this came up, you know, over the last 2 weeks, us, you know, beginning to talk about it and seeing, you know, the major changes in the wheat. And he's like, let's err on the side of caution. And that's what we've decided for our home. But it's something to think about. It's something to consider.
I think, look, honestly, I think that I think Zev is right. Fungi. He when in doubt, err on the side of caution. I think that is very wise advice. And so I would encourage listeners to you have to do some digging, don't you, Deb? I mean,
you really do.
Most people don't understand that the wheat that we have today is a monster. It's not what the Bible refers to as wheat.
No,
totally different thing. And there are
those out that are trying to do the right thing. And I mean, I think you mentioned before previously, Deb, about sprouting wheat, and if that improves. If that takes away all the bad stuff out of wheat.
It doesn't, because it's still the same monster.
Yeah.
And Jono said this last time. You go to the store, you think you're doing yourself really good. You're getting some kind of whole grain bread. And especially, you know, I had forgotten about the sprouted bread. Mm. That's very popular. And it's like, oh, this is going to be so much better for me. It's sprouted. Well, it's still the same wheat.
Yeah.
It's still the same exact wheat.
Now, while we're being controversial, can I elaborate just a little bit on this topic? Because what we have decided to do in our family, and I'm not saying that this is the correct interpretation of the verse and that everyone must do this. I'm encouraging everyone to read it for themselves and come to their own conclusions. But we came to a decision. Can I talk about this?
What are you talking about?
It's too late because we're on the radio. And it's all happening. Specifically in regards to these verses, and I'll just read them again. Deuteronomy 22, and particularly verse 11. Do not wear clothes of wool and linen woven together, it says. In verse 19 of Leviticus 19, it says, don't wear clothing woven of two kinds of material. Well, we read that some years ago, and we decided, well, I'll tell you what, let's just wear natural fibers. From now on, let's just wear clothes made of natural fibers. Now, I understand that according to Deuteronomy 22, people do come to the conclusion, oh, it's talking specifically of linen and wool. You're just not allowed to wear things that are linen and wool woven together. That's, you can wear anything else that you want, just not linen and wool. And I appreciate that's actually what the words say in Deuteronomy. It's not what it says in Leviticus 19:19, but it is specifically what it says in Deuteronomy, and that can be argued. I would look at the reason why we decided to go with natural fibers all around as far as clothing was concerned was because of verse 10 of Deuteronomy 22, do not plow with an ox and a donkey yoked together. And I asked myself the question, well, does that mean that it's okay to plow with a goat and a donkey, or is it okay to plow with a horse and an ox? Because it's not a, you know, an ox and a donkey, the specific example that's given there. Does it mean that it's okay to plow with a dog and a cat, for example? Is that okay?
That won't work.
No, that'd be fun to watch though, wouldn't it? but that is the question. So I what we decided anyhow, based on that, was we decided to go with natural fibers. And it something interesting happened. It only took, I suppose, what, 6 months for us to notice that a lot of the general public out there wear plastic.
Exactly.
But if we go into that, you need to explain why we decided on plastic fibers, because of what they do, because of what they actually do to the fiber to get nylon or to get polyester or to get, it's a mixing, it's a crossing.
Yeah, it's a mixing and crossing. Yeah. Things like the nylon and polyester and elastane and all that sort of stuff, is man-made chemical induced fibers and mixing of other materials. And we quite often see polyester and cotton mixed together and things like that. Just yesterday, you and I were looking even at sheets and things on our beds. Yes. We prefer now to get natural fibers because we prefer the way they feel. Now, one of the reasons is because of the health of the skin, the way that these fibers breathe and the way that they complement one's skin is one of the reasons why we prefer, now that we've made the change and we see the difference, we prefer to wear natural fibers. And the other one is that just when I go into town, when I walk around just in the general public, I notice people just generally wear a lot of plastic these days. And so much stuff is either a cross with some sort of man-made plasticky nylon polyester type of material with a natural fiber, or it's just that polyester nylon type of material that the clothes are made of. And it's not, it doesn't breathe, and I don't know why, but there seems to be a difference in the level of the style of clothing too, as far as natural fibers are concerned. And if I go down that line, I'm going to get myself into trouble.
I think I know what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? And when you talk about the things that we consume, and to do some research and educate ourselves on where does this come from? Is this something that has been tampered with? Is this not in its original form as Yehovah has given us and commanded us that we can eat? Is it something that's been tampered with? Is it a mixture of things? Should we be eating it?
To the best of our ability, I think that's what we should be striving to do. If we are walking in Torah, I personally just think it's just part of the journey.
I think so. I think it's part of the journey.
It is a journey. And see, Zev and I came to your exact conclusion many years ago, and we only wear 100%. You know, fabrics. And we prefer cotton. We try to get everything cotton. Cotton sheets.
Cotton's great. Cotton, linen, wool.
It is.
Even leather. And I mean, I understand there are things that, I mean, you can't have a cotton raincoat, for example.
No.
I mean, you don't want woolen swimmers, you know, and you don't, you know, things like that. I mean, there are specific purpose clothing.
It's very difficult trying to find socks. Without.
Yeah, and finding 100% socks and things like that. But for the most part, we want to represent to people, not in just our appearance in the way that we wear things, but also in our health and the things that we consume. We want to represent a people that do not mix. We want to represent the purity of God's word.
That's right.
That's Psalm exactly 119, verse 140, is it, that says, your word is very pure, therefore your servant loves it. I'm just going to find out and make sure that I've given you the right verse.
And that's it's the people that are actually attempting to do the best that we can with Torah in this very, very anti-Torah society that we live in. So
yeah,
it's very difficult. But you mentioned a while ago about, you know, you like the way that the cotton feels on your skin, and you know, we never stop to realize that the largest organ in our body is our skin.
True.
That's right.
That's true.
And it needs to breathe. It needs to, you know, it, when you get on, we'll throw this into you, when you get on the probiotic dairy and the fermented foods, at some point down the road, you know, after some healing crisis and different things, you will not have the body odor that you used to have. That changes. That begins to change. Now, not that you never will, but that definitely lessens, because body odor is a product of bacteria, and if you've got enough good stuff going on in your body, you're not going to have as much bacteria.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't you hate it when you pick up the Bible that you don't usually use, and you?
I know.
And you're looking at it, you go, "This is all foreign to me." And then, hang on, I'm gonna leave the studio. I'm gonna go and get my normal Bible. I'll be back in a minute. You girls just chat. I've never done this before.
But, well, while he's gone, we can start explaining. I do want to tell people how I started. I didn't start doing everything I do now just like day one, jump in and, you know, fermented up a storm. We actually went to the grocery store and bought a carton of plain organic kefir and had no idea at the time that it was not good. But that's what we did. We went and bought one, you know, a carton of that, and we bought a jar of Bubby's. Bubby's is a name brand. Sauerkraut, and it is fermented. It has the live cultures in it. And that's how we started. I didn't start just making stuff right away.
No, well, that's exactly, and that was the same for us too. And I mean, it was actually, I had the kefir sitting here for months, and I didn't want to drink it because it tasted, I just didn't like the way it tasted. I was using it in cooking, but it was you, Dev, who actually really spurred me on to get into it. And now I just love it. I can't get enough of it. And my taste has changed dramatically. Now I'm sugar free as well. And that I cannot tell you the amount of health benefits that I have seen in my body. But it is just so incredible, the change that I have in me personally experienced. And particularly the taste.
Oh my goodness. And see, that's what's so interesting is once you begin to get the fermented stuff in your body, that's when you lose the cravings for the wheat and sugar. Those begin to diminish because the probiotics are killing off the bad bacteria inside of your body that actually is what's responsible for craving the wheat and the sugar.
That's exactly right. I mean, I have struggled with candida for years and years and years and years. As a child, I had chronic ear infections, and I had to have the adenoids out and the tubes in my ears and all this sort of thing. And I was just constantly on antibiotics ever since I was about 6 years old. And that just totally destroyed my digestive system. So I've struggled with candida for a long time. And I can tell you, I am feeling better now than I have felt in a very, very long time. And I just can't even imagine going back to eating sugar now.
Yeah.
Now, can I interrupt? Sorry,
yes,
I'm back
yes,
now.
Yes, has his Bible.
Go back to the verse.
I have a point to make. Now, this is because so we were talking about eating pure, wearing pure, being a pure people. Is this a fair way to interpret the verses? Would be interested in the listeners' comments as far as your understanding is concerned with Deuteronomy 22 verses 9, 10, 11, also Leviticus 19 verse 19. But I mentioned Psalm 119 verse 140, or so I thought it was, that your word is very pure, therefore your servant loves it. Now, my regular Bible was out somewhere else in the house, and so I had to resort to the nearly inspired version that we often make reference to in the Torah Pearls with Keith Johnson and Nehemiah Gordon. And Keith often brings that translation because he likes the larger print Bible, and so we often make use of that. Now, I have that one in front of me, and I'm looking for it. I'm thinking, I'm sure it's Psalm 119. I'm sure it's verse 140, and I'm looking at it, and I'm going, I can't find it. I'm sure it's here somewhere, and I cannot find. This is ridiculous. I'm looking at a Bible I don't usually use. I'm going to go get my regular Bible, and the one that I use, Deb, is the a lot of the time is the New King James Bible. It's just the Bible that I'm used to using. So I went and got it, and I've looked it up. Lo and behold, it's even underlined in the in my Bible, and it is Psalm 119, verse 140. I got it right. It says, "Your word is very pure, therefore your servant loves it." Isn't it? Should we not be able to? Amen. Should we also not be able to say, "Your food that you created for us, that you designed for us, is very pure, and therefore your servant loves it." You know, the materials that you supplied for us are very pure, therefore your servant loves it. Do you know what it says in the Nearly Inspired Version? This is why I couldn't find it. It says in the Nearly Inspired Version, it says, "Your promises have been thoroughly tested, and your servant loves them."
What?
What? Your promises have been thoroughly tested. Well, we thoroughly tested your promises. They're pretty good.
No.
Man alive. So I couldn't find it. I couldn't find it. I thought this is not, you know, anyway, so that's my whinge. And once again, we would be interested in listeners' comments as far as that topic is concerned. Is there anything else we wanted to touch on today?
Well, when you were gone, Honey and I were, trying to hopefully, get people to understand that we didn't jump into everything we're doing now. We started slow, and I really suggest that people start slow. Start, don't go through your house and throw your food out, but start replacing it when that's what we did. We had ketchup. When the ketchup was empty, I made ketchup. I made the lacto-fermented ketchup.
Sure.
And that's what we have now. Do things like that. And the next time you go to the grocery store, stay out of the aisles. I'm going to tell you, they have specifically designed grocery stores to get your money and get it on processed foods.
Mm.
And if you'll shop the perimeter where nothing is processed,
yes.
That's where your meat and your fresh vegetables and fruits. It's all on the perimeter, and there's a reason for that. It's really funny because we were in a store not long ago, and for some reason I took a shortcut down an aisle, and it just happened to be the cookie aisle. And by the time I got to the other end of it, I was like, "Oh my gosh, I can smell it so strong that it was nauseating."
Yeah.
And I never smelled that before in my life. I never smelled that.
Because you have a heightened sense of smell now that you're not. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I've even actually gone so far. I don't actually even want people to see me walking down those aisles anymore.
That's funny.
Unless it's with a look of horror on your face, like, "Oh my goodness, people buy this stuff."
So start slow. That's what I said earlier. We bought something at the store. I didn't just start making this stuff. Honey actually did. I didn't. We bought it. Bought the kefir. We didn't realize it.
We've got actually no choice. We actually have to make it. But if you can get it, then sure, go and try it.
If you can get it, then get it. That's excellent advice, though. Slowly eliminate the things as they come to your attention that you realize, perhaps this is something that I don't want to be consuming.
And I just want to say also, particularly for those with children, I think it's very, very important to go slow and to help them to start, because the children may start to feel a bit deprived that they're not, getting what their friends are getting and things like that. So I think it is very important when you have children to start slow and let them see you eating it. And let them
And also educate them as to why. This is another thing too, because at least in our experience, the kids have wanted to know, and we haven't thought to us because of course we homeschool, but we educate our children ourselves. That is to say, and we don't think to ourselves, this is just sort of technical jargon that you don't really understand and it's going to be boring for you. We tell them, we let them know, this has got this in it, this has got that in it, that's not really good, that's not good, but this is good and this is why we do it. And they listen to that and they do understand it and they have a greater appreciation for the reason why we're changing our diet in such a way. And at least that's been our experience, and it's been very positive with
them. And, it's just as hard for adults. It's not just the kids. You really have to, this is something you have to purpose that you're going to do and that there's going to be a transition period where you're not going to like everything you taste.
That's right.
That's
right. And that's why having the reasons why you're doing this in your very firmly in your mind is very important.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah. So when you feel like going and buying that packet of chicken twisties,
you can.
Ew.
Don't do it, people.
No.
You know why?
Step
you're
away.
Because you're only going to make your health crisis worse.
That's right. And for those of us that are walking in the ancient path, it's a very important part of keeping the Torah of our Father.
Amen. I think that's very valid.
I do too. Where are we the happiest? We're the happiest where we're in obedience, and what a position of safety.
Amen.
To be in that position. So if we're, putting this in all areas of our life, and our food is going to be one of our big safety factors, then we're putting ourselves in a position of safety and good health and much longer life.
Yes.
Amen.
Yes,
and there's a good place to wrap it up, I think. I would be interested in the listeners' comments and questions. Deb, I want to thank you for taking the time to answer questions that the listeners have been asking of you in these posts, in these interviews. Really do appreciate you taking the time to answer each individual question. I think that is just so grand. I mean, my listeners know that one of the reasons why I do radio is because I'm too lazy to write stuff down or to type. And so I'm quite happy to talk away, but we do really do appreciate you taking the time to answer specific questions. So if people do have questions and any comments that you may have in regards to what we've been talking about, particularly with Leviticus and Deuteronomy, we'd love to hear from you, dear listeners. Thank you again, Dev, the Cultured Karaite. The website is Cultured Karaite. Sorry, Dev, is it the Cultured Karaite or is it just Cultured
Karaite? No, just Cultured Karaite.
Cultured Karaite, cultured with a K, karaite.blogspot.com. And we do thank you again for your time. And just let listeners know, you can also find the Cultured Karaites on Facebook as well. There is a page that plenty of information that you can find there. Go to the page and like it. And so we look forward to speaking with you again very soon in the future. In the meantime, dear listeners, be blessed, be set apart by the purity of our Father's word. Shalom.